I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned into Modus Operandi. As the conflict in Ukraine continues and the debate about supplying arms to the Kiev regime rages on, we'll take a look at what sorts of weapons the collective West is contending with. While the U.S. boasts itself as the supreme military in the world and the main supplier of arms to Ukraine, does its arsenal actually stack up in terms of modern capabilities? We'll talk to a retired Russian naval engineer who breaks down exactly what these modern missiles can do. All right, let's get into the MO. You may have heard the stories about the ghost of Kiev or the myth of Snake Island early on in the Ukraine conflict. By now, you probably know they were fake news. There was never a Ukrainian Top Gun fighter pilot who took down dozens of Russian jets. The soldiers on Snake Island never cursed out the Russian military before being blown up. In fact, they were actually captured safely and then arrested. The story of martyrdom never happened. The more recent stories, however, are ones that defy the laws of physics. They're tales of tech versus tech. Missile capabilities and advanced arsenals. Since Ukraine is not a manufacturer of these products, simply the end user, today's fairy tales are that of Russian military technology versus those from the US, UK, France, and Germany. Now, to be perfectly honest, I am certainly no arms expert, much less have the science background to explain how these things work. So we will bring in a man who is an expert with the proper technological training in their development. Andrei Martyanov is a retired Russian Navy engineer. He's got advanced degrees in engineering such weapons. Nowadays, Andrei is a writer and analyst. His latest book, called Losing Military Supremacy, The Myopia of American Strategic Planning. And you can see more of his musings on his blog at smoothiex12.blogspot.com. Andrei, thank you so much for joining us today. So first, I got to ask you, for these people paying close attention to the news on the conflict in Ukraine, we're hearing many different types of missiles are being used. Can you give us a brief, no pun intended, crash course on the differences between some of these missile systems, such as, you know, cruise missiles, glide bombs, ballistic missiles, and especially the new hypersonic missile systems?
Let's start from the end here. Let's start with the hypersonics, because there is a lot of confusion about this situation, especially in the West. Hypersonic missile is the missile which flies, or for that matter, aircraft, which flies with the speed above Mach 5. That means five speeds of the sound. But here is the problem, and this has been the problem for many years now since Russia announced the deployment of the operational hypersonic weapons. For example, ballistic missile, for intercontinental ballistic missile, is the missile which flies with many more speeds of sound, for example, Mach 27. And this, by definition, makes it supersonic, except one thing. Those missiles, like intercontinental ballistic missiles, even if they fly by the suppressed trajectory, they still fly above the Earth atmosphere. And in this case, it's kind of moot point if they have so many speeds of sound, because they fly part of their trajectory, actually, in the open space. The space, as we know, approximately starts at the elevation of 100 kilometers from the face of the Earth. But what modern hypersonic missiles are the missiles which fly within Earth atmosphere, exceeding the speed of sound by five and more times. Russia is the only country which possesses and deploys and actually uses to a devastating effect full spectrum of their hypersonic missiles. For example, one of those missiles is the Kinzhal missile, which is known as IRA ballistic missile. It is a missile which flies in quasi-ballistic trajectory. That means that part of its flight, pretty much as any ballistic missile, it also flies under the powered flight, being powered by its engine. Then the engine shuts off, and a missile, as you know, basic physics tells us, begins to fly as a ballistic missile, ballistic projectile. In other matter, they are so advanced that they can maneuver throughout all of its trajectory, including especially to the approach of the target. And they fly with the velocities. Officially, Kinjal velocity is between Mach 9 and 10. Now we're beginning to have the feedback that actually it can fly within Mach 13. Those are not interceptable, but Kinjal, despite the fact that it's still being maneuverable, doesn't conduct all of its flight under its own power. However, 3M22 Zircon missile, which most of the modern Russian ships carry, this is a fully blown cruise missile. This is not ballistic or quasi-ballistic or aeroballistic missile like Kinjal, which is launched from the aircraft. That missile, like 3M2 Zircon, it's a genuine anti-shipping and land attack cruise missile because it flies all of its flight path under its own power using scramjet, which constantly powers it. And while it hits the target, it still operates under its own power. The velocity of the Zircon officially is around Mach 9 to also Mach 10. And the new version of Zircon, which is coming up, will probably be in excess of Mach 13. And that's the type of hypersonic weapons we are talking about. And there is the last, so to speak, facet of those hypersonic missiles is, of course, strategic hypersonic gliding blocks called Avangard. Two regiments of this Avangard missile blocks driven by the one of the Russian used to be the strategic missile system carrying regular ballistic heads like MIR, multiple independent reentry vehicles. Now those Stiliad missiles, they're merely carriers of the Avangard blocks, which have their speed in excess of Mach 27, and they fly by basically gliding over the Earth atmosphere, and they are also maneuverable. All three types of those missiles, they are controllable from the Earth. And these are hypersonic missiles. The rest of it, classic cruise missiles, you can see one of them is, which is, of course, American-made BGM-109, TLAM, tactical land attack missile, Tomahawk. Russians have the variety of those missiles. They are subsonic, like 3M14, which is famous caliber, while Russia is also deploying high supersonic, which fly under the speed of hypersonic missiles, but still high supersonic speeds. And these are Mach 2.5 missiles, such as P-800 Onyx. And these are cruise missiles, and they vary in range and in their capability and in terms of the targets they are selected for. So I think so. That's pretty much, of course, yeah, if we go back to ballistic missiles, classic ballistic missiles, which we know since the 1950s, are the missiles which are under the power flight deliver those, well, it's called a bus, basically. It's the thing, so to speak, where you have the number of the MIRVs, multiple independent reentry vehicles, which are thrown into space, and then fly there, accelerate, and then fly less classic ballistic missiles without maneuvering. And that's what used to be basically the mainstay of the nuclear deterrence, both in Soviet Union and Russia and United States. Nowadays, everything changed in this respect.
Now, we have seen Russia most recently use glide bombs to devastating effect in the past few months. Why are these weapons so effective, and why can't Ukraine, or in fact their Western benefactors, really develop a plan to respond to these types of bombs?
Well, theoretically, Ukraine had some type of their air defense systems. For example, the later versions, which they had, 1980s, for example, of the S-300, and they had some Tor M1 short-range air defense systems. They theoretically could have intercepted at least some of those bombs. But Russia was pretty successful in suppressing air defense of the whatever is left of it in armed forces of Ukraine, including those Western-supplied weapons, such as like NASAMS. They just cannot intercept those gliding bombs. And now, obviously, they are much freer in terms of operating and launching those gliding bombs. Plus, most of them are beyond the range of what's left of the Ukrainian air defense. So in this particular case, yeah, there's very little they can do. You know, they might get lucky shooting one or two maybe, but they will not be able to sustain any kind of their even mitigating counterstrikes against those bombs. They will, what is called in military science, leaker. The leaker being the projectile or missile which penetrates the air defense. Russians have many of those leakers nowadays, precisely because Ukraine air defense was pretty successfully, I would say 90% of it suppressed, annihilated, or you know, taken out of operations, what have you.
Now, recently, Ukrainian forces claim to have taken down a Russian Kinjal missile, which is part of Russia's next-gen HSM arsenal. They say they took it down with the U.S. Patriot air defense system. First, can that be true? And is there any sort of anti-missile system that can take down an HSM at present? Or is there anything being developed to counter them? And if so, what sort of capabilities would those things need?
The Ukrainian claims are complete hoax. Obviously, Western media immediately started to spread this absolute baloney. No air defense complex currently in arsenal of any NATO country, including the United States, can take Kinjal out. The U.S., we're not talking about even PAC-1, Patriot PAC-1, which is was a joke. It was dismal performance in the first Gulf War. But the latest version of the Patriot PAC-3, it employs the main missile, which is MIM-104F, I believe. Its speed is 4.2. It's a high supersonic but not hypersonic missile, which will not simply sustain the G loads, which it needs to intercept, even the Kinjal flying at Mach 10. It's one thing. Secondly, the altitude of this missile, so to speak, apart from the range, which it can reach is 20 kilometers. Kinjal flies actually at the height of 30 kilometers and then attacks its target vertically down. So United States doesn't have any technology which is capable to intercept something like Kinjal, or for that matter, slower and less advanced Iskander ballistic missile. So this is, of course, was a hoax, and Mr. Klitschko was photographed with the concrete busting bomb bit up and claiming that it is Kinjal. It was debunked already by many military professionals. And obviously, United States, I'm not even talking about Europeans, is nowhere near to produce anything which can actually mitigate the salvo of the hypersonic missiles. And be that Kinjal or Zircon, let alone strategic hypersonic blocks such as the Avangard. This is completely out of the question. And in terms of air defense, United States actually is back behind Russia, not in years, it is in generation. And so the problem here is obviously the primarily media circus, and obviously the agenda they're trying to push. No, there is nothing which can stop it unless the missile itself, you know, just breaks down and then that doesn't reach anywhere. But Ukraine didn't shoot anything. In fact, is Ukraine cannot shoot most of any kind of missiles or drones Russia launches there. And here comes the other thing. In order for you to intercept something like a hypersonic weapon, I actually presented some basic operational and tactical calculations in my second book, The Real Revolution in Military Affairs. And you have a very bizarre chance, which is very slow, basically non-significant at all. If you shoot probably very many missiles, which creates some kind of the screen, then theoretically you might somehow get it. But no, you cannot shoot it down purposefully. And there is another thing there, how you want to develop the firing solution against the target, which most likely you may not even see due to its flying in the cocoon, plasma cocoon, and which is maneuvering. And both, well, actually every single Russian missile is maneuvering on its final terminal approach. And some of them maneuver violently. And so there's no way they can intercept it.
Yeah, I suspected that was fake news, that the Patriot system could take down the Kinjal. I'm glad you cleared that up for us. Now, hypothetically, how would Israel's Iron Dome fare up in that matchup?
For a simple reason. Iron Dome is basically designed for an intercept in actually quite substantial wholesale quantities of the Hamas and Hezbollah, what is called Katyusha rockets. Those are slow ballistic targets. And they accelerate to sometimes Mach 1.2, I believe, but mostly most of them are even subsonic. So, and their idea, because they are very easy to track and develop firing solution for something that when you already can see clearly on your radar or any other means of detection and tracking. So, yeah, in terms in modern warfare on the modern battlefield against the modern strike standoff weapons, especially flying with the high supersonic speeds, it's absolutely useless.
All right, coming up next, unintended consequences. A multi-decades-old warning comes to fruition. Joe Biden ignores American advice from the past. We'll discuss it when we return with Andrei Martyanov. Sit tight, the MO will be right back.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
In 1834, France invaded Algeria, and straight away the French started inhabiting it to strengthen their position. The colonists, known as Pieds Noirs, took the best land. From day one, the local population was put into an unequal position and was brutally exploited. This caused mass discontent. The people of Algeria began their long-term fight for independence. In 1954, the banner of freedom was raised by the National Liberation Front. A guerrilla war against the occupants broke out. The French tried to suppress the rebellion using cruel measures. Whole villages were wiped out. Acts of torture and executions of civil people, including pregnant women, children, and old people, took place. More than 2 million people were put into concentration camps. However, these punitive measures didn't help. The Algerian patriots managed to induce France to start peace negotiations. In 1962, Evian Accords were signed, putting Algeria on the path towards independence. But this was achieved at a colossal price. Algeria, by rights, is considered to be a country of martyrs. According to the calculations of historians, the French colonists are responsible for the deaths of 1.5 million Algerians.
Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. So it's not a new idea in U.S. foreign policy circles that America should avoid any posturing that could push then the Soviet Union into alignment with China. Though the USSR is no more, the union between Russia and China seems to be unfolding before our very eyes. Andrei Martyanov is back with us. So, Andrei, many critics of U.S. foreign policy say the West's unintended consequence in their actions in supporting Ukraine and posturing in Taiwan have now drawn Russia and China into this new alliance and military bloc that could counter U.S. position as a military superpower. We already see this alliance as evidenced by the CSTO, the Collective Security Treaty Organization, with Russia and China obviously anchoring that group. How do you see the Russia-China partnership shaping up in the years to come? Should the collective West be concerned?
We need to understand the United States is not a land superpower. It cannot stand in the conventional war in Europe against Russia, for example. And they know this. Most people in Pentagon who are not for political career, they know that. A combination of the military power of Russia and China serves only one thing. The neocons, primarily, who run U.S. Foreign policy today, they still consider China to be the target number one. They thought that they will dispose of Russia really fast, 1.5 years ago, but now they need to deal with China. China economically dwarfs the United States. Militarily, however, China is not as established power as Russia in terms of land and in terms of Navy, too. And here's where the United States tries to leverage one the last advantages it has. United States has excellent Navy for all of its problems and for all of its nearing obsolescence. But when you put it together with the excellent U.S. Navy submarine force, which is much better than Chinese one, you will see immediately why Russia and China especially, sees Russia as very important military ally, because Russia may provide and already is providing China with required technology and operational expertise, which China might need in case the United States wants to unleash the war in the Asia-Pacific region. And that, in this case, well, it should be concern for obviously those people in the Washington who want to unleash World War III, because economically, United States already is not a competitor in especially Russia-Chinese Economic Union or alliance, which already de facto exists. But joining forces militarily, NATO is pipsqueak compared to that thing, if it emerges, and it looks like, yeah, Russians and Chinese moving in that direction.
Now, we hear a lot in the media about how Russia is running out of missiles. Any truth to that? I mean, what is Russia's true production capability, and is that set to increase at all? Now, conversely, the U.S. and NATO have a backlog of orders to arm Ukraine. The U.S. cannot seem to meet the demand. Is Russia really going to be in that same position as the U.S.?
One of the major miscalculations, strategic miscalculations, which actually denotes, and it's a sign of the death of the rules-based order, world order, or Pax Americana, is the fact that United States, and I wrote 3 books on that, never had a clue about the size of Russian economy. As Mr. Putin stated, Russia produces number of missiles more than whole world combined. And they don't understand how Russian economy works, and they don't understand how Russian military industrial complex operates. And Russia outproduces United States in every single, not only United States, actually, NATO combined in every single category of their military material, be them missiles, be them shells, be them tanks, be them what have you. You can take a look at the speed with which Russia renovates and updates its nuclear submarine forces right now, and how many ships Russia produces, builds now. And it's astonishing. And there you go. So it's absolute hoax, obviously, as usual. And now they expected Russia to, you know, basically tumble or, you know, crumble within a month or two. they evidently people there don't understand what real economy is. They cannot.
Now, any final thoughts or perhaps predictions on how the course of this conflict in Ukraine is going to play out over the next, I don't know, let's say this year?
I hate forecasts, obviously. I hate being Cassandra. First, of course, I cannot know, possibly. I don't have enough information. Only people who have information about all that are military political top in Russia, general staff, and those places you cannot even get near around them. But I would say that we are seeing the end of armed forces of Ukraine. Actually, Russia is annihilating as I speak. Third iteration of the Ukrainian army. And if you want to see what is going on, I will ask people to go back to December 2021 and Russian so-called ultimatum. Everything there is already stated very clearly what Russia wants to achieve, and it will be the either rolling NATO back to 1997 borders, or which becomes now very possible, very probable scenario, disintegration of NATO as such. And when you look at the effects, I would say Russia achieved more than they even expected, and it will continue until Russia probably builds the land bridge between Kherson region and Transnistria. And then whatever will be left of Ukraine, if anything, and Russia will be dictating capitulation conditions. That's pretty much it. That's what I'm expecting.
Andrey Martyanov, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Now, make sure you check out Andrey's stuff at smoothiex12.blogspot.com and check out his newest book called Losing Military Supremacy. Thank you so much, Andrey.
Oh, thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy and current affairs. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next time to figure out the MO.